54 to 15%.
That's how much an agent benchmark shrank when an independent contributor checked the math. And 15% is exactly the autonomy ceiling that Harness imposes on the agents it runs in production.
This is the addition from AI Expert, the week when agent autonomy became a measurable number, and the silicon economy below them changed hands. Let's start with the number nobody wanted to hear. Ponytail is an open source skill with 82,000 stars on GitHub in less than 2 months. The pitch? Instruct your code agent to behave like the laziest senior dev in the room. The operating logic is a decision ladder injected into agent context. Does this need to exist? Does it already exist in the code? Does the standard library solve it? Does a native platform resource solve it? Does an installed dependency solve it? Can it be a one-liner? Only then write the minimum that works. The rule set runs on 16 agent platforms: Claude Code, Codex, Cursor, GitHub Copilot, Gemini CLI, Aider, and others. The central skill.md is approximately 100 lines. The remaining 6,232 lines are adapter boilerplate. The original benchmark promised 80 to 94% code reduction.
Then Colin Eberhardt, CTO of Scott Logic, pulled the numbers and found the fundamental problem. The benchmark's baseline was a naked, chatty model that filled each response with pros, caveats, and multiple implementation options. That inflated the comparison artificially. His test? Swap Ponytail for 7 English words, follow Yagni principles, and one-liner solutions. That prompt beat Ponytail on Ponytail's own benchmark.
Hacker News reached the same conclusion independently, describing the repository as essentially just these rules and a ton of boilerplate for system-specific plugin systems. Every line beyond core is an adapter.
The author rebuilt the benchmark from scratch, 12 feature tasks run by Claude Code 2.1.177 on a real fast API and React repository. The corrected README now reports 54% less code on average, 94% only where an agent would have overbuilt, near zero in already minimal code. Cost fell 20%, execution accelerated 27%. The earlier figure was a per-task ceiling reported as if it were a mean.
But then JetBrains ran an independent study, 80 paired tasks, the third in a series that previously measured the caveman skill at 8.5% less code against the announced 65%, and RTK at 7.6% more against the announced 60 to 90% reduction. JetBrains used a different model, Claude Sonnet 5 with medium reasoning effort, a larger task set, and an external harness.
Result? 15% less code, 10.3% less cost, 11% less time. JetBrains called it the first tool in this series with a statistically solid signal of cost savings. But they were clear. The reduction only appears where there was room for overbuilding. Ponytail targets output tokens. The input side barely moved.
The gap between 54%, self-reported and corrected, and 15%, independent, is the practical number, real savings, but between a quarter and half of what the README still announces.
There's a security point that can't be missed. In an adversarial tier covering path traversal, SQL injection, and token forgery, Ponytail scored 100%. A simple Yagni plus one-liners prompt dropped to 95%, losing one guard case. That's the only dimension where framework complexity clearly pays off.
The larger question that Eberhardt raises survives the specific benchmarking. Prompt-based skills and frameworks are proliferating with no shared evaluation standard. The question he posted in the Anthropic Skills repository, how authors test and ensure quality, remains among the most voted on and unanswered across every skills library.
Which brings me straight to Harness. They're not building benchmarks. They're measuring what their own agents do in production over 6 months. And the number they published is the most honest I've seen from any CI/CD vendor to date. 15 to 20% of engineering work is genuinely autonomous, from Jira to pull request. 80% is still assisted, developers using agents as tools, not delegating entire workflows.
4 in 5 tasks, the human is still in the loop. That's the real state of the art, not what any vendor keynote presents as the new normal of software development.
Harness identified 4 pillars after redesigning the entire SDLC around agents. Pillar 1, spec-driven development. Everything, product, tech, UI, test specs, live in version-controlled repositories. Confluence pages don't work because agents need structured, always current context. Result? Teams prototype UI mockups in 30 minutes instead of weeks. The second pillar quantifies where agents belong, that 15 to 80 split. The architecture combines traditional microservices with agent endpoints exposed via model context protocol. Each agent has bounded permissions and a single responsibility. A code review agent doesn't implement changes. A testing agent doesn't touch production.
The third pillar, and the most neglected, is where the gap reveals itself. Harness specifies six testing layers. The fifth, continuous monitoring of efficacy in production, is the most skipped and most painful. Swap a system prompt, update a knowledge base, or change model version. The agent's output quality degrades silently without a harness watching.
Forrester found that 30 to 40% coding gains often translate to less than 10% team productivity gains when planning, testing, and release pipelines stay manual. Bottlenecks shift, they don't disappear.
The fourth pillar is operational readiness reviews from the hyperscaler playbook, immediately after design review, not development, with severity tiers applied. High items block launch, medium items need resolution in 90 days, low items go to backlog. Post-launch, service teams meet weekly to review data plane and control plane health.
Given that landscape, agents with real autonomy and 15% of tasks, benchmarks that shrink under independent scrutiny, monitoring that most teams don't yet have, the question that remains is, where should control live?
Cloudflare published a formal answer, the Agent Access Model, a security and authorization framework that treats AI agents as first-class infrastructure entities, not extensions of human identity. The premise is one rule: don't trust the execution. Authorize each action against the task and its accumulated state.
Existing controls fail on four specific points with agents. First, credentials survive the task. Service accounts were designed for long-running software. They carry broad scopes, long-lived keys, rare rotation cycles. Apply to a short-lived agent, those credentials outlive the work they were issued for and sit in memory, logs, and environment variables where they can be re-executed. Cloudflare's fix: credential lifetime should match task lifetime. For an agent, that's often minutes.
Second, agents operate at machine speed. Anomaly detection tuned for human activity reacts too slowly. An agent with database access and a network egress path can read a table and post it to an external endpoint before a control tuned for humans finishes sampling. Third, the prompt is not a perimeter. Instructions like "don't access production" shape behavior, but don't enforce access. And a model can be manipulated by injected content in the data it reads.
Fourth, agents compose authority through delegation hops. When one agent invokes a tool that invokes another agent that calls an API on behalf of the original human, the answer to who is this and what can they do disappears somewhere in the chain. The AAM answer: each action is evaluated against three criteria: who the agent is, which task it was authorized to execute, and which resources the graph has already touched. That accumulated state can only shrink the set of remaining capabilities, a ratchet that narrows, never widens.
The comparison Cloudflare uses is precise. Beyond Corp removed implicit trust from the network. The AAM removes implicit trust from the task execution graph.
A boundary you can talk your way past is not a boundary.
Enforcement belongs in the harness mediating tool calls and the network layer mediating packets, not in the model's instruction set. Cloudflare also shipped concrete infrastructure. The agent's SDK now includes MCP Client Manager with full OAuth 2.1 flow, redirect for login, code challenge generation, authorization code to access token swap, and tool namespacing to prevent collisions. Durable objects, the stateful compute primitive that serves as identity anchor for agents, move to the free tier.
And they launched Signed Agents, an extension of the Verified Bots program using HTTP signatures from WebBot Auth to cryptographically authenticate agent traffic at the network layer. First cohort, ChatGPT Agent, Blocks Goose, BrowserBase, and Anchor Browser.
While Cloudflare solves identity at the network level, LinkChain published the reference architecture for the autonomous SRE agent they run in production on their own Kubernetes. Eric Johansson, LinkChain's deployed engineer, wrote the complete walkthrough. And the most important number isn't capability, it's cost.
95 to 99% cost reduction per scheduled check. No loss in problem detection.
The previous architecture ran the full orchestrator, approximately 20 model calls, every scheduled cycle, even when the cluster was healthy. The change, pure Python state collection plus a single Claude Haiku call with forced tool use, that generates a structured health report delivered to Slack, ranked by severity. Full agent power, parallel fan out to six specialist subagents, pod inspector, scaling analyzer, performance analyzer, log analyzer, security auditor, reliability auditor, only fires on on-demand investigations, the write inversion.
The structural read-write split is what makes HitAll genuine. Read and write are separate code bases. Write tools exist only within a single change executor subagent behind an interrupt gate. The orchestrator literally has no path to a write tool. In-cluster RBAC mirrors the split. Read cluster-wide, write with restricted scope. The agent can read any namespace. It cannot touch a resource without human approval of that specific proposed action via Slack, using socket mode and outbound WebSocket with no inbound endpoint exposed. Johansson is direct on the question of which write tools to include. HitAll only protects production when the human can genuinely evaluate what they're approving. Scaling a deployment to three replicas is readable. A Helm upgrade rewrites dozens of invisible resources at approval time, so it was deliberately excluded despite being operationally useful. Coarse, high blast radius tools stay out regardless of utility.
To close the agents block, Brex published the pattern that separates workflow logic from runtime to unify evals and production. A five-person TypeScript team built the approach because their agents run for an hour across dozens of LLM calls, making drift between eval and production expensive and risky. The problem is structural. Frameworks like LangGraph and Mostra express orchestration directly in the SDKs themselves. Orchestration logic and the framework are the same artifact. To eval the logic, you run the framework. To ship, you run the same framework. No version of orchestration exists independent of the runtime. Brex's old approach, re-implement agents in a separate eval runtime, two copies of the same logic, guaranteed to diverge over time.
The solution, write the workflow as pure business logic with no knowledge of where it will run, and inject a runtime adapter at execution time. In production, the adapter connects to temporal cloud via workers on Brex's Kubernetes. In evals, it connects to a lightweight in-process runner on the internal eval platform. LLM calls route through the Vercel AI SDK to an internal LLM gateway that centralizes rate limiting and auth. A single version of orchestration exists. What passes eval is exactly what ships to production.
The enforcement is architectural, not disciplinary. The team built the constraint into the build system itself. If a developer writes orchestration code depending on runtime-specific features, the build fails. But the cost is real. Orchestration loses direct access to native runtime primitives. Every capability beyond the common denominator needs re-exposure through the agnostic interface. This pattern only pays off if the team genuinely needs both production durability and fast offline eval on the same code path. Teams with short-lived agents or tolerating separate implementations shouldn't pay that cost.
Agents under scrutiny, 15% real autonomy, identity within the task cycle, architecture that enforces rather than merely instructs. Now, where the dollars are actually going.
AMD reported Q2 2026. Data center revenue, $6.7 billion, 107% year-over-year growth, up from $3.2 billion a year prior. Sequential, $5.8 billion in Q1 to $6.7 billion in Q2. Data center is now 58% of AMD's total revenue. Total revenue, $11.54 billion, 50% year-over-year growth, beating LSEG consensus of $11.28 billion. Non-GAAP EPS, 1.66, against estimate of 1.62.
For perspective, AMD's Q3 2026 revenue, guided at $13 billion, will equal all of AMD's revenue in fiscal 2023 in a single quarter.
Lisa Su guided that data center revenue will double again in 2027, and that server revenue will grow more than 80% year over year in H2 2026. AWS, Microsoft, Google, and Oracle all expanded ePoIC deployments in the quarter. Helios, AMD's rack scale system integrating CPUs, GPUs, and networking, started shipping to Meta, OpenAI, and Oracle this quarter, with volume ramp expected in Q4. Anthropic locked an agreement for up to 2 gigawatts of Instinct GPUs in Helios systems on a multi-year pact.
AMD's CapEx tripled in 4 quarters, $808 million in Q2, up from $282 million a year prior and $389 million in Q1, pre-building capacity before demand arrives. The stock dropped 5-10% in after hours, despite beating top and bottom line. Some analysts had modeled Q3 guidance as high as $14 billion. For operators evaluating supply stability, that's noise. What matters, the sequential acceleration of data center and the Helios customer roster.
And there's a missing piece in the stack to serve inference at optimized cost, and Talos is going to try to fill it. On August 6, 2026, AMD announced a definitive agreement to acquire Talos, a Toronto startup that etches AI model weights directly into silicon. Terms weren't disclosed. The team, co-founded by Lubisa Bajic, former TensorRent CEO and former AMD executive, alongside COO Leila Bajic and CTO Drago Ignatovich, will join AMD's AI group under Vamsi Boppana.
The HC1 chip mechanism fixes the model's data flow and burns weights into mask ROM. Separate SRAM handles KV cache and fine-tuning adapters. On Llama 3.18B, it delivers more than 16,000 tokens per second per user, multiples of what current GPUs achieve. A 24-person team built the HC1 with $30 million. Then they raised $169 million in February 2026. Total funding, $219 million.
The trade-off is clear. The HC1 runs exactly one model. Swapping models requires 2 new metal masks via proprietary tooling, around 2 months. The HC2, expected this summer, supports 20 billion parameters per chip. A trillion parameter model would map to approximately 50 accelerators within the capacity of the Helios rack. DeepSeek's 671B on the HC1 demands 30 tapeouts, showing why the technology serves stably deployed models, not frontier weights in rapid iteration.
The integration logic is disaggregated inference. Instinct GPUs do prefill, the compute-intensive prompt processing, and Talos accelerators do decode, token generation. AMD already announced a similar solution with Cerebras on July 23rd at the Advancing AI 2026 event. Talos could displace Cerebras for stable, smaller models.
But here I need to push back on the optimistic framing. In a market where the best models change on a weekly basis, the 2-month opportunity cost to respin for model swaps is real. AMD is betting there's a large class of workloads where models don't change. Code assistance, document extraction, real-time transcription. It might be right for specific verticals, but that's not the frontier standard.
It's a bet on vertical versus horizontal, and it brings us to the hidden cost sitting under any GPU cluster, regardless of which silicon is running. SpaceX spent $295 million on Tesla Megapacks in Q2 2026, total for H1, $329 million.
Each Megapack stores more than 3.9 megawatt hours. More than 420 units deployed provide roughly 1.6 gigawatt hours of battery capacity, enough to absorb GPU cluster peaks without overloading the regional network. At Colossus 1, 208 Megapacks were deployed before Memphis Light, Gas, and Water's permanent substation came online. That substation took 97 days to build, against 2.5 years in the normal process.
Colossus is targeting approximately 580,000 NVIDIA GPUs, 520,000 GB200s, 30,000 GB300s, and 30,000 H1 H200s in 2 gigawatts of capacity. The GB200 NVL72 configuration with 72 GPUs per rack implies roughly 8,000 racks at full deployment. Total infrastructure, buildings, power, cooling, networking, more than 420 megapacks, reaches $35 to $40 billion.
Musk on the Q2 call. Our tentative goal is to have 20 gigawatts of power and cooling online by the end of next year. Then he self-corrected. I would expect something in the ballpark of 15 gigawatts at the utility level. SpaceX committed $2.8 billion to build its own natural gas infrastructure, reducing reliance on third-party turbine contractors.
Lease revenue covers everything with margin. Anthropic pays $1.25 billion per month for Colossus 1 through May 2029, $40 billion total. Google leased 110,000 Colossus 2 GPUs at $920 million per month through June 2029. Combined lease revenue, $2 billion monthly. AMD's power bill of $90 to $160 million annually represents less than 1% of annual lease revenue. The megapacks are marginal in the P&L, but they're the grid stability layer that makes clusters above 50 megawatts operationally viable.
And underneath it all, the Colossus, the Helios racks, the Instinct GPUs, there's a memory war that will determine who controls the latency bottleneck for the next 5 years. Samsung presented its complete memory roadmap at the Future of Memory and Storage Summit in Santa Clara. The central problem, Lino Park, VP of Flash Solutions at Samsung Electronics, put on the table: AI clusters today support roughly 100 tokens per second per user. Samsung is designing for 1,000 tokens per second by 2030, 10x throughput.
The HBM4E is the next concrete deliverable. Sample shipped in May, active evaluation by ecosystem partners. It uses a 4-nanometer base die, increases TSV count by roughly 4x, and employs advanced packaging with more than 300,000 microbumps at tighter pitches. Result, 4 terabytes per second of bandwidth and 64 gigabytes of capacity in a single 16-layer stack at 16 gigabits per second per pin, more than 20% faster than HBM4. To manage thermal concentration in dense stacks, Samsung added a heat pipe block, a chimney placed directly over hotspots on the stack.
HBM5 shifts to 2-nanometer base die with gate-all-around technology, shortening interposer channel lengths to improve I/O signaling. Then comes ZHBM, which collapses the current 2.5D layout. The AI accelerator sits directly above the HBM stack as a unified 3D structure, cutting the physical distance between processor and memory. Samsung claims the next generation interface can deliver 8x HBM5 performance, more than 10x memory density, 3x energy efficiency, and less than half the thermal resistance.
But reaching those numbers requires tight co-design with accelerator partners, limiting adoption to vendors willing to share die-level design data and coordinate packaging. HBM4E at 4 terabytes per second and 64 gigabytes per stack is available for evaluation now. HBM5 and ZHBM remain co-design items. Factor that uncertainty into any cluster build beyond 2027.
And Samsung's HBM revenue signals the market's own urgency. HBM sales will more than triple in 2026 versus 2025 and reach 50% of total DRAM revenue by 2030. The structural question is whether ZHBM, with co-designed 3D integration, arrives in time and with yields that make it usable for procurement decisions and not just roadmap slides.
To close the silicon block, there's one last piece about what happens when you have the right hardware but not the right kernel to extract performance from it. On August 4, 2026, Cursor open sourced the Mixture of Kittens, MOC, a megakernel that increased end-to-end training throughput by 1.41x on 512GB 300 GPUs. The same day, Latent Space published arguments for why megakernels are obsolete. The collision clarified a real tension.
The case against: megakernels eliminate kernel launch overhead and inter-kernel synchronization lag, but writing them is hard. Per-kernel tuning plus scheduler overlap often beats a monolithic fused kernel because each component can be optimized independently. NVIDIA is solving synchronization in hardware. Rubin introduces tile-level dependency triggers, allowing kernel N plus 1 to launch CTAs for a tile as soon as kernel N completes, without waiting for stragglers. That's what megakernels did in CUDA code.
Cursor argued the opposite for MoE layers on NVL72 racks. MoE consumes more than half end-to-end training time. A GB300 NVL72 is 72 GPUs in a single NVLink domain, a qualitatively different communication topology than a DGX cluster. Integrated Grace CPUs are slow relative to GPUs. GPU streams regularly waited for CPU work, logging, metrics. Only a megakernel can eliminate CPU-GPU synchronization entirely. Individual kernels cannot.
The MOC numbers: MXFP8 forward runs 2.37x faster than the best public baseline, DPP plus transformer engine, hybrid EP plus Megatron, with EP degrees 64 and 2048 tokens per GPU, BF16, 1.92x, end-to-end on 512 GPUs, tokens per second per GPU rose from 760.9 to 1070.2, a 1.41x gain. Pull-based dispatch achieves 29% more NVLink bandwidth utilization under expert imbalance versus push-based. Signaling latency dropped from 103 microseconds to 18.
The constraint: MOC requires NVIDIA Blackwell SM100 or SM103, specifically GB200 NVL72 or GB300 NVL72 racks. Needs CUDA 13.0 or higher, PyTorch 2.10 or higher, Python 3.12 or higher. Running on H100 or B200 DGX nodes will fail the build. The project is Apache 2.0 and already powers Cursor's composer model training on tens of thousands of GPUs. On commodity clusters and Rubin hardware, kernel splitting plus CTA scheduling and hardware grows increasingly viable with much lower maintenance burden. No 67,000 lines of fused forward pass to debug. On NVL72 racks, where the Grace CPU bottleneck and NVLink topology create distinct constraints, Fusion still wins by a margin that justifies the engineering cost.
Silicon with revenue that doubled, batteries in the billions to stabilize clusters, memory fought layer by layer. Now the final question, who controls the gateway through which all that power flows?
Together AI answered with concrete data. They put DeepSeek V4 Flash 0731 and GPT 5.6 Luna head-to-head on DeepSeek, 113 real long-horizon code tasks from active open-source repositories, 4 attempts per task, graded by Hidden Test Suite.
Luna is the better engineer. Pass at 1, 67.3% against 53.3% for DeepSeek. The gap holds at each equal attempt count, 81.6% against 70.1 at K equals 2, 90.3% against 80.5 at K equals 4. Luna also runs faster, 16 minutes median against 23, 92 steps against 148, and produces less, 70,000 tokens against 104,000. On raw single-shot quality, it's not close.
But cost inverts the story. DeepSeek costs 10 cents per attempt, Luna 61 cents, 6x difference. That delivers 532 tasks solved for $100 on DeepSeek against 110 on Luna. Concretely, DeepSeek's pass at 2, 71%, already beats Luna's pass at 1, 67.2%, and two DeepSeek attempts cost 20 cents, one-third of a single Luna run.
The cascade is the practical answer. Run DeepSeek first and escalate to Luna only on failure. Hit 78.9% accuracy at 38.5 cents per task, more accurate than Luna alone and 37% cheaper.
One detail most analyses missed. When DeepSeek fails, it breaks the repository's existing test suite in 9% of cases. Luna does it in 15%. The more expensive model has higher probability of corrupting working code. Luna deployments need full regression gates. DeepSeek needs less.
And there's clear segmentation by domain. Luna wins 7 of 8 task domains, the largest margins. Program analysis, 69% Luna against 33 for DeepSeek. Concurrency and durability, 70 against 38. Language runtime internals, 86 against 59. 30-point gaps in reasoning work. DeepSeek wins 1 domain, query and config languages, 78 against 70. SQL builders, window functions, keyset pagination, config parsers.
JavaScript is a cliff for DeepSeek, 35% against 60 for Luna. If your agent stack touches JavaScript, DeepSeek is false economy. If it lives in config, query, or Rust, where DeepSeek reaches 55% against Luna's 60, the gap closes and the cascade makes sense.
OpenWeights stopped being an experiment and became a line item. The next step is for someone to control the gateway through which that routing passes, and 3 moves this week define where that gateway will live.
First, Microsoft put the Azure API Management AI Gateway tier into public preview on July 27, 2026, available in East US 2 and Sweden Central at no cost while pricing is determined. The structural shift isn't subtle. The control plane of the new tier is organized around models, MCP servers, and tools, not APIs. It's a structural separation from the policy layering approach of the classic and V2 tiers, which retain their capabilities unchanged. The gateway routes based on exact match of the model field. All OpenAI-compatible providers share one endpoint path. Each published model needs a unique name. Anthropic runs through a custom provider with Messages API pass-through. The gateway provisions in roughly 1 minute, with no scale units to plan. Tool Federation extends the same pattern to the MCP layer. Teams can expose an existing MCP server via SSE or streamable HTTP, convert REST API operations into an MCP server by uploading an open API spec, or use more than 1,400 connector-based tools from Power Platform and Logic Apps without hosting a server. Multiple federated MCP servers behind a single endpoint, so an agent connects once and resolves tools across all of them. Backend authentication supports API keys, OAuth 2.0 client credentials, managed identity, and MTLS.
Governance runs via policy cards on the portal as JSON properties, not the XML expressions that APIM veterans know. It covers request and token limits, quotas, Azure AI content safety, and fallback to secondary model. Telemetry flows as OpenTelemetry Xrex with Gen AI semantic conventions to Application Insights, Datadog, Splunk, Grafana Cloud, or any OTLP endpoint the customer controls. The resource runs in the customer's own subscription and enter tenant.
But there's a concrete point of concern in the access model. The runtime key is scoped to the gateway, reaches all models and all tools published on that gateway. Microsoft's guidance is one key per application, but a leaked key has blast radius of the entire gateway, not a specific product. Teams relying on APIM subscription scoping to limit consumers to specific APIs need to redesign that boundary completely.
And there's a preview status that can't be ignored. No SLA, APIs and limits can change before GA. Regions are East US 2 and Sweden Central for now, and more significant, pricing isn't announced. The core governance argument of cost control stays unresolved until pricing lands.
The second move, Cloudflare unified 5 primitives, Workers AI, AI Gateway, Vectorize, R2, and Browser Run into a single AI search namespace. One Wrangler AI search instance create command points to a source URL, handles crawling via Browser Run, chunking, embedding, and vector storage in a single step. For sites without sitemaps, the --/ parse type discover flag follows links to find pages.
The Cloudflare DevStack MCP demonstrates the deploy. 10 surfaces, docs, blog, API docs, community, Astro, Vite, Vitest, Hano, Replicate, and OpenNext, each with one AI search instance. A single binding in Wrangler.json-C lets a worker make one AI search.search call that fans out to all 10 simultaneously. Results return as res.chunks with citation metadata and instance tags, re-ranking enabled, up to 10 results per call. Embedding and re-ranking cost 0 tokens when using designated workers' AI models, eliminating the operational burden of predicting token counts for search workloads with unpredictable query volume.
The third move, and the most structural, is MCP v2. The largest revision of the Model Context Protocol since launch arrived on July 28, 2026. The protocol now registers 400 million monthly SDK downloads, 4x growth in 1 year, driven by ecosystem pressure to run servers on standard HTTP infrastructure.
The central change, removal of the initialize and initialized handshake and the MCP session ID header. 6 SEPs converged into a single design. Each request carries protocol version, client identity, and capabilities in line. Any server instance can handle any request. Sticky sessions, session stores, and stream hold logic vanished from the protocol layer. The Cloudflare Agents SDK embedded support immediately. The new primitive is create MCP handler running run a common worker. Amazon Bedrock Agent Core Gateway enabled via a single update gateway API call. Updated SDKs in TypeScript, Python, Go, and C# v2.0 shipped alongside the spec.
3 infrastructure upgrades follow from statelessness. Routability. New MCP method and MCP name headers let load balancers route traffic without inspecting the JSON body. Mismatched headers return header mismatch error. Cacheability. Responses from list and resource carry TTLS and cache scope fields modeled on HTTP cache control. Traceability. We3C trace context propagates through fixed key names in _meta, enabling distributed tracing compatible with OpenTelemetry across SDKs and gateways without custom instrumentation.
But the elicitation migration is the hard part. The real breaking change in the spec. When an MCP server needed input mid-request, approval before a deploy, billing confirmation, the old protocol kept a stream open. The new spec introduces multi-round trip requests. The server returns input required with what it needs, the client collects the response, and the operation retries with that input. No session persisted between rounds. Teams using server-initiated elicitation can't upgrade with an SDK bump. The interaction model requires code rewrite.
The tasks extension was promoted from experimental to official. The lifecycle is stateless by design. Tools call returns a task handle, and clients drive progress via tasks.get, tasks.update, and tasks.cancel. The tasks.list method was removed. Without sessions, enumerating active tasks isn't a safe operation to expose. Routes, sampling, logging, and SSE transport enter a 12-month deprecation clock starting July 28th, removal earliest on July 28th, 2027.
To close the block and the addition, NVIDIA released Alpamayo 2 Super for commercial use under OpenMDW 1.1 licensing, an open weights model of 34 billion parameters built for perception, planning, and data workflows of rototaxi and autonomous vehicles. First release in the Alpamayo family that allows production deployment without additional NVIDIA permissions.
The architecture combines a 32 billion parameter Cosmos 3 Super Reasoner with a 2 billion parameter diffusion action expert, post-trained with reinforcement learning. The score on the LingoBoa benchmark for autonomous driving reasoning, 79.2, first place among 37 evaluated models, 17-point margin over Quenwen 2.5 VL at 72 billion parameters, which has double the parameters, 15.1 points over Gemini 2.5 Pro, 23.2 points over GPT-4o.
In closed-loop AlphaSim simulation, 910 real scenarios reconstructed, the model reaches a score of 1.50 plus or minus 0.1, nearly double the 0.81 plus or minus 0.01 of Alpamayo 1.5 at 10 billion parameters. Trajectory, min ADE.6 of 0.911 meters over a 6.4-second horizon on 1,434 samples. The training corpus includes roughly 115,000 hours of multi-camera driving video and 3.7 million reasoning traces.
The 34 billion parameters make Alpamayo 2 Super a cloud inference workload. The model that goes in the car is a distilled derivative. The benchmark score is the teacher model ceiling, not the vehicle runtime spec. But the OpenMDW.1.1 license covers fine-tuning, derivative models, and commercial redistribution. And models distilled from Alpamayo 2 Super carry no additional license conditions. That removes a common legal blocker for autonomous vehicle programs wanting to build proprietary stacks on open foundations.
solutions.
The Alpamayo family has accumulated 400,000 downloads on Hugging Face since launch at CES 2026, and the entire family was retroactively relicensed under OpenMDW.1.1.
The question that remains for the CTO at the end of this edition is the same one that opens the second flock. Does your inference roadmap assume 2025 pricing or a 2027 stack? Because whoever controls the gateway, cloud provider, CDN, or your own stack, controls the cost. And most of you haven't made that call yet.
The week proved that autonomy is a number, not a promise. 15%. That's the ceiling honest engineering puts on agent autonomy today, and every data point this edition orbits that frontier. The Wire on Monday opens with the count Meta hid in Instagram's two-stage ranking and what it teaches about allocating compute in ranking pipelines. Until then.